You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. You just been listening to Hot Texas, played and sung by, perhaps, the Hot Texas Swing Band, our friend Alex Dormont.
We love Alex and the Hot Texas Swing Band, and we thank him for allowing us to use the music every week.
So, what's happening tonight?
Well, you know, I just have to mention, we just read a news alert. Last week, our guest, Matt Scott, we asked him to tell us a little something that we wouldn't learn in his bio. And what did he tell us?
He is a professional wrestling fan.
And we actually talked, I think, a moment or two about Hulk Hogan, because I think he had actually seen him.
He mentioned that. And, of course, Hogan passed away today.
Yeah.
Anyway, we sent an email to Matt.
Yeah. So, Matt, if you're watching tonight, we're thinking about you and all of the Hulk's fans. And, you know, he just did something for professional wrestling. It just got it, you know, it just got it on the mat, on the map. Anyway, we're delighted to have you with us tonight. This is episode 145 of Rendezvous with a Writer, and we have a special guest who's joining us tonight.
Denise McAllister.
Yeah.
Denise F. McAllister. Sometimes I gotta get those middle names in there.
Denise has just joined us. If you're listening, Denise has just joined us on screen. Hello, Denise. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. Good to see you guys.
Yeah. Where are you joining us from tonight?
I am coming from Jefferson, Georgia. It's about 60 miles northeast of Atlanta. And I always say that I try to avoid downtown, although it's not bad, but I just don't care for traffic.
We understand.
How far are you from the Booth Museum? Because we know that you're also part of the Literary Guild there. How far away are you?
I love the Booth. Well, from where I am now, it's an hour and a half. Sometimes it's even 2 hours. And unfortunately, I don't get to visit it as much as I used to. I used to live a little bit closer.
I wanted to,
but it's a wonderful museum. Everybody should go.
We had friends, the gals of the band Gone with the West, that performed there just a couple of nights ago. And, of course, we had Elizabeth Woolsey here. She kicked off the month of July, and we're thankful that you suggested that we meet her. So we're expecting we're going to hear some more names of authors that are part of the Booth Literary Guild for 2026. Yes?
Yes, yes, and Mark Warren lives in Georgia. You had Mark Warren.
Yes. So the West is alive and well. You do not have to live west of the Mississippi to be deep into writing about the West, right? We've learned
that. That's right. You have to get to the Booth Museum sometime.
Yeah, it's on our list. So do you have a little something about Denise that you
bio here we're going to read.
Hey.
Although Denise F. McAllister had her start in Miami, Florida, surrounded by beaches and the Everglades, somehow a love for horses in the West took hold. She counts it fortunate to have included her beliefs and love of horses in writing two book series with co-author Natalie Bright, Wild Cow Ranch and the Rafter O series. Recently, Denise completed three mystery books, the Katie McKim series, about crimes at horse shows. She is a member of the Western Writers of America, Women Writing the West, Northeast Georgia Writers, and the Booth Museum's Art Museum Writers Guild. Also a longtime editor, she has been a member of the Christian Pen Editors Association. Wow. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
We're so glad you were with us just earlier this year in February, I think it was, with Richard Prosh, editor of this wonderful anthology, Through Western Storms. And you were on as one of the writers. And I think the story that you wrote for this was also a co-write with Natalie. Is that?
Yes, it was.
I have my memory right? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And we've had Natalie on also as a guest. And it was so fun seeing both of you, of course, at Western Writers of America just about a month ago. In Amarillo. That was really fun.
I know.
Yeah. So great.
This is like old home week or whatever you call it. We should all have a reunion. We keep coming on your show and we love it.
Well, we love having you. This, let's talk about one of the things that Jim brought up in the bio is that, of course, you're a writer. And in a little bit, we're going to get in detail about your writing, but you're also an editor.
Mm-hmm.
And we really haven't talked a lot about editing.
We haven't had anybody on here, actually an editor.
Yeah, so, on the program. So yeah. If you don't mind, we'd like to kind of delve a little bit into the editing process. And maybe the first question is kind of, what is an editor? Why should a writer be linked up to an editor? And what are some of the things an editor can do for a writer?
Wow. We could talk for hours now, couldn't we? let me just back up for a second and say that I was in the corporate world for almost 30 years. I was thinking about it the other day, and it seemed like different positions I had. You know, I worked with brochures and newsletters and all kinds of corporate publications. And so I was constantly editing, proofreading. And I have to pat myself a little bit on the back and say that in our office, I always seemed to find the typos. So almost like 10 other people could read something and then they'd give it to me. And I think what it was is that it was like painstaking, and I looked at every single little word, and I was very slow. And whether I read it out loud, I don't know if I did that in the office, but I always tell authors they should definitely read their work out loud. And there's a little microphone, for instance, on Word. You can have the computer read it to you. So that's so important. And even with my own things, I mean, no one's perfect. I notice things in my emails or just, you know, if I write a short story, whatever I might write, I can read it again and again. And I'm about to hit send, perhaps, on an email. And I'm like, oh, gosh, look, I put in instead of is, you know, just little things. So I think everybody needs an editor, I guess, is what I'm saying. All authors need an editor. And a lot of times, most of the time, publishers will have an editor. And they're great editors. But what I discovered, I mean, even they are human. And I've had instances where they might have missed something. They mm-hmm. might catch typos and, you know, misspellings and whatnot. But there are other things, like we call them echoes. If you repeat the same word again and again. I had an instance like that where an editor did not catch that. So there's all kinds of things, but I believe everyone needs other people to read your work. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. You call that, was it echoes you said? When
yes.
you repeat a word too often?
Yeah, repetitive words. If you keep using the same word, you know, maybe in the same sentence, maybe in the mm-hmm. same paragraph. To a reader, sometimes when you're reading along, I'm sure you guys do it too. You'll be reading along and you're like, oh, your brain, like, oh, they used this word before. They used this word. And it kind of makes you stumble. It kind of stops uh-huh. the reader. So you have to be yeah. careful of things like that.
Yeah. Well, I can understand that. I just never heard the term echo. That's kind of cute, you know?
This is why we like to talk to writers, because we're not writers. And this is how we learn more about what we want to learn about the writing process and what all goes into it.
Well, how much leeway do you give as an editor? Do you have, or how much leeway do you give somebody who's editing? You know, we talk about punctuation and spelling,
yeah.
and maybe leave out or a little the word the letter A. You know, but what can they do? Do they change sentence structure? Yeah, because I'm partly thinking, well, if you let them have too much control, all of a sudden maybe your idea got changed too.
Well, I have all these notes, but I'm not even going to look at them. There's all kinds of different editors, but you can Google this. You can Google it and, you know, ask about book editors. What types are there? There's what they call developmental editors, and they might look at the whole picture, the whole structure of your story. They might not even look at typos or things like that. There are copy editors. I do a lot of copy editing, which would be punctuation, spelling, all those good things. There's line editors, there's fact checkers. So I guess it just depends on, for the author, you need to find the right kind of editor for you. And I always like to use like a personal relationship. I always like to get recommendations. It's almost like with anything you do in your life, if you're going to buy a swimming pool or buy a car or buy shoes or buy whatever, sometimes you can get recommendations from other people who have done it before you. So I was really blessed, like with Western writers, you can talk to other people, word of mouth, things like that. There are different organizations that you can, again, Google freelance editors. So you can look those up, I think. Fiverr, F-I-V-E-R-R.
Oh, Fiverr.
You know, that has freelance editors. I myself would like to work with somebody that I kind of know or a friend knows, rather than just getting someone from cyberspace that you don't know. So things like that. And then, you know, there's also things about fees. How much is an editor going to cost? Well, that depends. It depends on, are you going to have a short story read? Are you going to have a 90,000 word novel read? So it all depends on the time involved. And I always believe, though, to have a good relationship and to know what each person expects. So for the author and the editor, you have to have, you know, some kind of phone calls beforehand, emails, if you can meet in person, whatever it takes. So your expectations, you're on the same page, so to speak, you know, for, to use a writer's pun.
Would you edit your own work, or would you have somebody else do that?
Well, supposedly, if I'm a good editor, I can catch mistakes in my own work. But having said that, nobody's perfect. I, like I said before, I catch things all the time in my own work. So it is great to have somebody else read your work. And in my experience, I remember writing with Natalie, the publisher did have an editor, and we've run across some really great editors. So even editors need editors.
I was going to say, we had a guest on recently who worked with an editor, and the editor said, you know, this needs to be first person. And she ended up rewriting the manuscript into five first persons, and actually things flowed, you know. And I think that's just so interesting. You know, when you have that other set of eyes who maybe can say, we have a friend, Joe Brown, that's just put his third book through the process. And there were sections where the editor said, you know, you need to do this, or this sequence should happen, you know, before this one or after this one or whatever. And I just think, the benefit of having someone outside of your tunnel vision and what you thought, you know, was what you were trying to do, be able to make suggestions to make it better for the reader. I mean, come on, we're trying to make it better for the reader, right?
Right, for sure. And even myself, I've gotten feedback from readers, different people who would ask me questions about characters and, you know, what happens to this one. So, you know, I would almost like to improve my books. I wish I could almost rewrite certain things. You know, we always want to keep working at them, even though, you know, they're published and it's too late. But so it does help to have other people read your work.
You know, I'm assuming that some authors out there probably use friends and family to do some of the editing for them. And I think sometimes psychologically this may be difficult. I mean, if I was handing a book to my sister or somebody, I'd say, well, you didn't do this right. You don't spell that right. You know, that would kind of drive me crazy.
I think you develop that relationship.
And it just interests a third person that you can get mad at without worrying about it, probably would make more sense to me.
That's true. Yep. I've had a couple of people when we were talking about whether they needed an editor or not, I had a couple of people say to me, oh, well, my wife used to be an English teacher. She'd be great. Well, that's not 100% necessarily true sometimes. Yeah. You know, no offense to anybody, but, you know, sometimes it does pay to go outside and get a professional. Yeah.
It would seem maybe, and we'll just finish talking about this maybe with this question. It would seem in this day and age of people, you know, authors being able to self-publish in any kind of way, independent publish, self-publish, that hiring a professional editor to really get their manuscript as ready for print as possible, or if they are searching for a publishing house, if that same manuscript is just like ready to go, it would make sense to have that partner to me, to have that professional editor.
Right. I agree. I think if an individual wants to be a professional author, you know, and write books for publication or write other things, then you might need to invest in an editor. And I will say too, because I'm just always open to everything, there are different softwares as well. So, you know, I don't use them. I'm not all that knowledgeable about them. I belong to a writers group in Georgia, and a couple of people there might use ones. I had written some down, Pro Writing. There's all different things. ReadSee. There's even in Google Docs. But, you know, I always feel like sometimes that's a robot to me.
That's what it feels like to me too, but yeah.
But I mean, they might work well in certain instances.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to shift gears for just a moment. And when we come back from this spot, we're going to get an in-depth look into Katie. I'm already calling you Katie because Katie McKim is on my mind on Denise's mystery series. But first, we're going to have a little word here from our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. And again, if you are a writer, maybe you'd like to increase your social media presence or refresh your website or launch a website. Our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, are standing by to assist you just as they assist us. Here's exciting news about a new feature offered to writers, and we are taking advantage of it ourselves. We'll be right back. Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page starting at $369. Bluebookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking to Denise F. McAllister.
The creator of Katie McKim, and excuse me if I call you Katie again, Denise, it's not intentional.
Well, while we have these commercial breaks, you know, Bobby and I talk about, okay, what's next that we're going to bring us back with and what we're going to talk about. We have about 4,000 ideas going through our minds, and once in a while we kind of bring up two or three at the same time. So if it's confusing for the audience, we apologize.
We're just kind of always excited. All right, so we're going to talk about the series, and I'm holding up all three books at the moment so that those watching can kind of see. Will you hold Stalker or Saint? Okay, and then that's book one, Stalker or Saint, and then book two, Pegasus Flying, and then book three is Hero Brothers. And this is a really, really wonderful read. Very engaging characters. If you know a lot about horses and horse shows, you will feel right at home. And if you don't worry about it, because you will feel right at home. Denise has a wonderful way of introducing you to this world that she knows, right, what you know, she knows so well about. And the characters are really engaging. There's a few that travel from one book to the next, of course, like any great series. And so
there's some bad guys too.
Yes, there's some bad guys too. So now we're going, I've stopped our prelude. Now, Denise.
Okay.
Will you give us just maybe a little brief overview of the series and how, Katie, how did you meet her? How did she make herself known to you?
Well, I myself used to show horses. I don't now, but I did for maybe 15 or more years. So I think a lot of that is still stored in my memory banks. And I always loved horses. As a kid, I didn't have much access. But anyway, about the book and about Katie, she just came to me, a young woman. She's had different tragedies, though. I wanted it to be a mystery. I wanted it to really kind of grab the reader. And that's why when I thought of that title, I thought, I really want to get into this mystery, kind of romantic suspense. There's not a lot of romance, I don't think, but there's suspense. So she's in her late 20s, maybe 28 or so. And I also wanted to set it in a different place than maybe I'm familiar with. You know, a lot of Westerns might be in Texas, Wyoming, Montana. And I thought, what about Northern California? And when this comes to me, who knows where it comes from, my brain or in dreams. But I did do some research and I thought, well, golly, California, the gold rush and all that, there's so much Western history in California. So that's where I said it. I did some research on Redding, California. That's where she lives. But anyway, I don't want to blab too much. So she has had some tragedies. It seems that, I guess this isn't a spoiler because it's on the first page, but her parents are deceased in a very tragic and mysterious way. And so she pretty much throws herself into showing her horse. She loves her horse, and that's what consumes her time. So she really loves that. So that stalker is saint, but different mysterious things happen. Different people might follow her and whatnot. Do you want me to jump? I'll jump to Pegasus.
Sure. Jump to Pegasus Flying.
Once I get rambling, I'll talk to I'll spend time.
Oh, no, no. We want it. Yes, we want to hear from you. Pegasus Flying.
There's a magazine she works for as well. And the magazine is called Pegasus Publication. So that's where that title came from. And there's more horse showing. And I will say about the magazine, though, there was an owner that she really loved. He was almost a father figure to a very cozy older man. Wes was his name. And he now is not the owner. And what I call a drugstore cowboy comes in to purchase the magazine. And he's a piece of work, let me say, and puts his boots up on his desk when she comes in to talk to him. And he's just not the real deal. So that's Pegasus Flying. But she does cover some horse shows, discovers some criminal activity going on. So there's a lot of, you know, skulking around and surprises and whatnot.
Book three.
Hero Brothers. Well, she had met a detective early on when different horses in the first book were supposedly drugged. So she met this detective, and in book three, he gets involved. I don't want to give anything away, so I have to think of how to say this. But he gets involved with some other ex-military guys, and he has to go on an undercover mission. So it was great fun for me to do the research into this. Like, well, what kind of gun does he carry? And if they're going to go to wherever they go, I won't say yet, on their undercover mission, they're going to fly in this plane. Well, what kind of plane is it? And whatnot. So it was great fun for me to do the research for that. But again, lots of things will happen to Katie, and lots of scary things and mysterious things. But all in all, she's okay.
She's a strong independent woman. And she's learned to be independent. At one time, even though she was in her late 20s, she's living with her folks. And yet they were always encouraging her to stand, you know, on her own two feet. And then she's suddenly there she is. She's bereft and she is having to stand on her own two feet. And she takes to that. she really, I think we see her in books one and two anyway, really enjoying being an independent, strong woman and encouraging other women around her to also be independent and strong. And she kind of worries a little bit about, well, I'm not sure if I found myself in a relationship, will that mean that I'll have to give up some independence? And then what if suddenly there I am alone again? You know, so we meet a woman very much in transition,
yes,
in her life. But she's very smart. She's very alert. She's got really good ears, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Because she overhears things. She happens to be in places where she's hearing people talk and her ears pick up on it. And so...
she eavesdropping?
Oh, no. Okay. She just happens to be in the right place.
At the right time.
Exactly. And she's very... I really like her. She's just very in tune. And of course, her relationship with her horse, Cash. Would you just tell us a little bit about Cash? He's quite talented. Where did that name come from?
Cash.
Yes. Oh, thank you, Jim, for asking me that, because sometimes I get such a kick out of titles or character names and whatnot. And Cash just came in my head. But I have to say that I have a neighbor, this is funny, with a little dog that's like probably part Chihuahua, if that's how you say that. But his name is Cash. But then I also have a friend who, she does have a horse. I think she's out in Washington State. And her horse, I don't know that she has him anymore, but was named Cash. So all of those things kind of lined up in my brain. And that's the name of the horse in this series. But
it's short for
cash in your chips.
Cash in your chips.
All right.
Yeah.
See, I like it.
He read book three, so he didn't learn the background.
It's
of
okay.
Cash.
Yeah. It's okay.
But Cash is she will. I now have learned the proper word is exhibit, not compete. But she exhibits Cash in both Western and English writing traditions, doesn't she?
Right. Yes. Yeah. At classes. And I take that off from my memory banks of when I would go to shows. I mean, there were a lot of shows that there were all kinds of classes, and I was so surprised to see, they were quarter horse shows. So I was surprised, this was years ago, to see quarter horses, English attire, and the rider, you know, all dressed in English attire and going over jumps, and the quarter horses were very tall. I'm like, oh my gosh, they don't look like quarter horses as I knew them. But then they had Western classes, trail classes, halter classes. I think you and I talked about halter classes. So, and you can call them competitors. They're competitors, exhibitors. They're all kinds of things. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess all these things just came back from my own memory.
Well, I think what's fun, again, is you do take us with Katie. We're going into this world in books one and two. And just what's fun is if it's not the world that you're accustomed to, it's like any other great writing where you suddenly find yourself in a world that you don't know. You will get the feel for, you know, where do people eat at a horse show? Where do they shop at a horse show? Where are they in the stands? What's happening in the arena? And so then you may actually decide, you know what? I want to go see one of those live. I want to go see a halter class. You know, I want to see. You
know? And they're all different too, I guess. Yeah. You know, there's so many different horse breeds out there. My sister, she's not with us any longer, but anyway, my sister and her family, they used to have saddlebred horses. Those shows are completely different. Oh my gosh, I was so surprised. You know, the way they high stepping and the crowd makes a lot of noise as they're running around.
Yeah.
So it's all different.
Did you have a last comment before we move?
Well, a comment about Katie, you know.
Comment on Katie.
You know, she really is an independent lady, but she runs into enough problems and things that kind of attack at her that she kind of gets down there for a while, But she kind of finds her faith, and it kind of brings her back up. I mean, faith is is definitely one of your themes here in the third book, anyway. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So she comes back probably as strong as ever.
Yeah.
Well, I think so, too. And maybe in the first book, maybe the second book, she's almost, well, she's angry at God, I guess. You know, she doesn't know. And a lot of people, I mean, I went through that in my own life. I know tons of people who believe like that. You know, something terrible would happen. I mean, in life, terrible things do happen. And so Katie went through that, and she's, you know, still going through the grieving process, I guess you'd say. And she's living in the same house that where her parents were. So she was kind of upset with God, like, why did you allow this to happen? And I'm not going to trust you anymore. And just the fear of, you know, being left alone and what's this life all about. So she's got lots of questions, lots of soul searching to do. And so,
yeah, but, and she does it.
She does it.
She's a good character.
Yeah.
She's a good character.
Okay, we're going to step away again, Denise, for just a moment to tell you about one of the places you can order the books of many of our author guests, including all three books of the Katie McKim Mystery Series. Find their books on our Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. And when we come back, we're going to meet some of the characters, some additional characters from the series. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Talking to Denise McAllister. We're talking about this series of books here. By the way, each one of them is a standalone book. It's you can take it from the beginning, you can jump in the middle, and then go back and get the first one or the third one. They are different. They are standalone. The characters do move forward. And I kind of want to ask the question, is that difficult writing a series and keeping these characters, you know, some are going to lose, some probably going to stay, but is it difficult so that the reader is reading and thinking, well, wait a minute, that character couldn't have done that because they did that in the last book.
Because they were killed off in book one.
Yeah, so is it a problem writing the series, I guess, you know, that's the question.
Yeah, well, I hope I don't have any characters in coming back in a certain book if they were killed off in the first book. That would be terrible. I would blame that on the editor. Like, why didn't you catch that? But, you know, I guess it's all, well, I say a juggling act, but for the author, you have to keep all those pieces of the puzzle, whether you do it on a spreadsheet, however you do it, an outline, you have to keep them all together. But it's interesting, and they can be standalone books for sure. And I guess as the author, you just have to remember to put some kind of little backstory or some little mention. You can't repeat everything, but you can at least give them little clues, like, you know, well, this is what happened to her a year ago or 2 years ago. You know, they have to know about what happened to her parents and where is her brother and things like that. So You have to take care of the reader for sure.
I think you did that very, very well. Book one had all kinds of things that went on. And when we got into book two, you give us some references back to book one, but you don't actually name a lot of names. And you give us a little more detail in book two on things that happened in book one, but we maybe didn't get Katie's, let's say, full perception. In book two, she's thinking about that incident again, and we are reliving it with her in a different kind of way. And I found that really terrific because I thought, well, you know, if I start with book two, I may want to go back to book one because I want to know more about that wacko woman, you know.
That's true, yes.
You know, and I think, Jim, you found that with Hero Brothers, because Jim would come out and say to me, can you tell me? And then he'd have a question, and I'd say, well, you really need to read book two, but let me give you just a little bit more than Denise did so that you can, you know, navigate through. And so I think that's the beauty of any good series writer, mm-hmm. is you know that a reader could pick it up at any point. And you don't want them to feel like they have to start at book one,
right?
Because they may not have it available, or they may not have the time to start at one. They really want to get to the one they just read a review of. So, you know, that has to be one of the challenges.
I might have mentioned it to you maybe off camera, let's say at another time. But I did read an author recently, and she had a little, I don't know if I'd say disclaimer, but she had a little paragraph in her book, and I thought it was really kind of helpful. And she said the same thing to her readers, that you can read these books as standalones, but it might really enrich your experience if you do go back to book one and, you know, find right. out all about the characters' experiences right from the beginning. So at least she said that to the reader and gave them that option.
Yeah. And that is smart. You have a question you love to ask about characters.
Characters,
Yeah.
You get control of all these folks. You get your thumb on them. They do exactly what you say. Or do they? Do they ever surprise you?
They do surprise me. Well, just in one of the books, I guess book two, he came on the scene. That guy, there's a food truck at the horse show. Right. And there are at different horse shows. You can either, sometimes they'll have a little cantina or a little coffee shop to get food. Sometimes they'll have a food truck. So in book two, at the food truck is a young man named Jeff, and I call him Food Truck Jeff. Yeah. And he's enamored with the 1960s. So he'll say things like Groovy Man or I don't know, whatever. He's a vegetarian. He doesn't eat meat. And so he's very much like a hippie. I think he even has braids. So he surprised me. I thought, where did he come from?
And he's really fun. Yeah. From book two, he's really fun. And I enjoyed the scenes with him, because there's a little levity, and he does become a more important character as the book goes forward. So he hung around with you for a while, obviously. I don't know if he makes it into book three or not. It doesn't really matter. He's charming.
He's in book three.
Okay. So the readers said, we want more Jeff. Okay. So
I didn't know what about him, but I envisioned him something like you just talked about. I just knew he had to be a character and a half. So,
Okay, we're going to, we're just going to kind of call out a name or two, Denise, and then if you would just tell us a little something, a sentence or two. One of the characters that's, I think, across all of the books, perhaps, well, no, book one, Vince Manning and his wife, Donna. Just who are they, and just who
Vince
are they?
Vince Manning is the horse trainer, Katie's horse trainer. And, you know, a lot of people, they don't need horse trainers, but on the other hand, some people do. And my experience was, there was a horse trainer, and he would go to the horse show with you, help you out, ride the horse, do whatever needed to be done. So Vince is a kind of a piece of work, and he's not always so nice to Katie. And then his wife is there. And some of that I took from real experience, I should say. Yeah. So his wife would take care of the horse's manes. And depending on what breed of horse or what type of riding, there's all different styles. So I do remember women like braiding the horse's mane, and, you know, with getting a little yarn and whatnot to tie it up. So she
getting
had her
ready
job as well.
Yeah. What about Lily and Stan?
Oh, they're neighbors of Katie's. So Katie lives in her parents' house, and it's kind of like a little small ranchette, let's say. You know, her dad used to run everything, but of course they're deceased now. So she's in this big house by herself. But the neighbors, not too far away, Stan and Lily. And Lily's a little petite lady. Stan's kind of a bigger guy. And they have a couple of horses. And so they, a lot of times, have Katie take care of their horses they'll bring them to her little barn, but it's all on a very small scale. But they're nice people. At least she has some people close by.
Yeah, they're good. They're really good neighbors. Who do you want to ask about?
I have a couple. First,
Pastor
John, you know?
Pastor John.
He's an interesting man of the cloth, let me tell you.
He is.
Well, Pastor John, I always remember finding out about what they called Cowboy Church. I love that, Cowboy Church. And you can come as you are if you're wearing your spurs, you got dusty jeans on, whatever. But it's so neat. At a lot of the horse shows that I would go to, if they were like weekend shows, you know, sometimes there were people, family people there with their kids or whatever. And so they would miss church on Sundays. They weren't home because they'd be away at a show. And then whoever would put it together, they'd have what they called Cowboy Church. And it's a national thing. I think there's a directory that you can find for cowboy churches. So Pastor John, he also has involvement with ex-military guys. I think he had like a little support group for some guys in different areas. But he also
you know, not to give anything away, but he is a deep character. You know, and we talk about prayer a little bit here in the book, in the third book, and we talk about killer angels, and they all work for Pastor John, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, we have time for one more.
How about El Toro?
El Toro.
Oh, El Toro. Well, in book three, Hero Brothers with the ex-military guys, and they do go on an undercover mission, and it does bring in the subject of trafficking, human trafficking. And they do go to a place in Mexico. And El Toro is the ring leader, the bull. So he's not a very nice character. And
he's really big and really ugly.
Kind of ugly, yeah.
Kind of ugly. All right, I am now really looking at time, Denise. I hope you're having as much fun as we are.
I am, yeah.
We're going to step away for one last break, and this is for a spot about our business, outwestshop.com, which helps support bringing this show to you. So take a listen, and when we come back, we'll find out what Denise is up to next. Don't go away.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Running with a Writer. We're talking with Denise McAllister. We're having a lot of fun talking about these books, let me tell you.
The time just flies. Yeah.
What are you working on next?
Well, you know, you had mentioned that anthology that Natalie and I had a story in before, Through Western Storms. And I think it inspired me to write some short stories. So that's what I've been working on lately. And I'm waiting to hear. I sent one off to a magazine, so I'm kind of crossing my fingers, waiting to hear. So that's kind of exciting for me. And of course, I'm doing editing. In fact, I need to get on somebody's editing project this weekend. And I will put in a little thing only because I'm just so honored and so excited about it. I've been asked to be a spur judge for the Western Writers of America for the second year in a row. And that's always, it was such a wonderful experience last year. And I just have to tell you, it's like, because the entries, they send you their books to, you know, review and give an opinion about. And it was like Christmas. Every other day I would have a FedEx truck or UPS or, you know, so I got all these wonderful books. So I'm excited. So I'm sure that will keep me busy. But again, I need to get back to maybe writing some novels, maybe in the next series. Yeah. But there's always something.
Where can people find your books, Denise?
Well, at your bookshop, of course, and any other streaming booksellers. Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all that. Somebody even told me it was in Target, so that's kind of fun. And there are links on my website as well.
Yeah, and on your website as well. And what is your website?
Well, my website is my last name, McAllisterEditing.com, because okay. I had that as, you know, my editing website.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Jim, you have a little quote.
Quote. Yeah, we do. You know, for those people who are watching, you know, and not just listening, I keep putting my glasses on and taking them off. I had recent cataract surgery, and we're not quite to the point we got new glasses yet. We can see better, and we can not see so well, so that's why I keep doing that little changeover. You know, we got a quote here, a passage, Katie's self-talk thoughts. Now, this is from the book Hero Brothers, the third in the series. She knew the scripture about being quick to listen and slow to speak wasn't putting women down or telling them they couldn't speak their minds. It was just a good lesson for all humans, not to jump at speaking or getting angry before hearing the whole story of both sides. Take a breath. Listen to others before leaping to conclusions or becoming defensive. There you have it.
Good lesson for all of us.
Yes.
You know, Katie had received a lot of good counsel from her folks, didn't she? And I love how that is shared as Katie thinks over things. And her parents just gave, they just had really smart wisdom that she, I think she probably always knew. And she kept it, you know, she kept it in her memory bank. But she, it comes up. And there are lots of wonderful, I won't say lessons, but things to think about, ponder as you're reading that you can put into your subconscious and actually, I think, make you a better person if you act on some of those things. Yeah.
I think
a delightful series. Yeah.
It's nice when we can even learn lessons from a fictional book.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Do you have a favorite place that you like to write in?
Well, it's funny, in my house, towards the back of the house, there are some woods, and my dining room table is back there. And a lot of times I'll put my laptop on the dining room table, and I don't really use the dining room table to, you know, set a whole big meal or anything on the dining room table. Yeah. So that was kind of my favorite place for a while, and I would look out at the trees.
But, oh, yeah, nice.
Right now I'm in an office room, so it changes.
Well, we really appreciate the time that you gave us tonight, Denise, and in helping us prep for the show. We really appreciate the time that you gave us. We want to thank our guest tonight, Denise F. McAllister, Sam Haston of LA Talk Radio. We want to thank Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison and Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band. And we want to thank you or tuning in live or catching the podcast or later on listening to the show off of Podbean. We really, really thank you again. This was episode 145, if you go looking for it. And next week, we'll be talking with author John Bradshaw, who we got to meet at Western Writers and had a couple conversations with. And we will be talking about his book, Elmer Kelton's The Familiar Stranger. We're really looking forward to that. And Jim, do you have any parting comment?
Well, as we always say, it's a great day out west.
Keep riding, and we'll keep reading. Catch you down the trail. See you next week. Bye.
Thank you, Denise. We appreciate it.